Hi, everyone, and welcome to DevRaga Personal Finance. My name's DevRaga. I'm your host. And in this episode, we have a very special guest. I actually watch a lot of YouTube videos about traveling, particularly airline reviews, because I'm a little bit of an aviation enthusiast, and I really want to get the best of traveling when I do go overseas. A lot of the time, a lot of the conferences that I go to are overseas, and I follow a fair bit of YouTube vloggers online, particularly in the travel space. So I recently saw a video from Josh Cahill, who's quite a famous YouTube vlogger. So I sent him an email and I said, hey, Josh, why don't you come on the DevRaga episodes and talk about your experience of being a YouTube vlogger, your experience of travel, your experience of airline reviews. And he actually replied. So welcome, Josh. Thanks for coming to the DevRaga Personal Finance.
Well, thanks for having me. Thanks for following my channel. A big honor for me. And I'm very happy that you reached out. It's nice to be on the other side sometimes and having people ask questions so I don't have to. And I'm very much looking forward to the next hour or so.
Lovely. We're going to talk about who Josh is, his vlogging experience, his investing style, his YouTube income. We're going to talk about some controversies. So let's get started.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Now, if you're new to the podcast channel, remember the three main aims: education, empowerment, and entertainment. And if you have any special questions, don't hesitate to contact me via Twitter or via Facebook. Welcome, Josh, again. So, Josh, can you tell us a little bit about your background? And complete disclosure, I follow your YouTube channel and I watch pretty much every video. You might have seen me comment occasionally. I think the most recent video that you did was the Air India Airbus A350. I think you've released a video just after that, which I'm very interested in. My background heritage is Indian, bought new planes and really changed their livery. So tell us who you are. And why did you get into this space? I'm just curious.
My name is Josh. I'm originally from Germany. And just as you, I love aviation. And I pretty much turned a hobby into a job. And over a quarter billion people have seen my videos in 6 years. I have over 1 million followers. And predominantly known for holding airlines responsible since I'm self-funded. But at the same time, also trying to use my influence for other things, such as organizing the first all-female flight off Afghanistan. So that's pretty much what I do. I can be a pain in the butt for some airlines, as you probably said, but all with the mission to hold them responsible. And I've been doing this for quite some time, and I very much enjoy it.
Do you do this full time, or did you initially do something else in your career and then switched over to this career as a YouTube vlogger?
Yeah, that is. So I've been doing this full time for 6 years, but before I was working in China for 3 years in branding for another airline. I'm a dropout. I've never finished university. I studied branding and marketing. Have a diverse background. My mom is from the Czech Republic. My grandmother is from the Ukraine. Used to live a lot of places. I was hitchhiking around the world. I think I have a very relatable story for a lot of young people who have probably been a bit clueless in their life, but got educated through traveling pretty much. And then the internet came and the possibilities to establish what I do. And then I started writing about airlines first on my blog. And then I edit the visuals, the videos. And that is predominantly now what I do, is the airline reviews on YouTube.
Okay. So can I ask how old you are? I mean, you've got 1 million followers, bit of a global, I guess, personality. How old are you?
I'm 37. 37. I do look a lot younger. I get that sometimes. Yeah. But yeah.
So you started this just 6 years ago, and is your main purpose basically do airline reviews? And if you did airline reviews, is it mainly the business and first class experience, or do you do all classes?
Interestingly, actually, like 80% of my flights are in economy. I do have a lot of reviews that just feature economy class. I'm not very invested in the miles, like frequent flyer miles and stuff, because I have a lot of diversity. I go to places that are very off the market of the mainstream airlines, which are part of the alliances, such as SkyTeam, Star Alliance. I spend a lot of time in Africa. I go to East Timor, the very places where most of the airlines don't fly. So I can give, offer like some variety as well on my channel. So a lot of flights are actually back in economy. I do first class barely. I can't even remember the last time I flew actually first class. Business class once in a while, if there's something interesting, such as that Air India flight recently because it's a new product. But generally, flying is sometimes very expensive if you don't use frequent flyer miles. And the majority of people travel in economy. And I think that also makes you stay relatable. That's a comment that I get very often, because a lot of those airline reviewers, they focus on the upscale market, such as the business class flights. But I do try to have a great variety of products featured, but with a main focus on economy as well.
Yeah, look, majority of my listeners probably will fly economy. Pretty expensive flying business and first if you've got a family of four or five. So totally get that you do mostly economy. And it's interesting because when you sort of book a flight, and if you don't know some of the potential tips, some of the potential like seating arrangements, you know, there are certain types of aircraft. So one of the things that I check for is what type of aircraft am I flying? And then I go to Seat Guru and try and, you know, maximize my seating arrangements as much as possible. Do you also review hotels or is it just airlines?
It's mostly airlines. Generally, I end my reviews at the hotel when I get there. So because then I have time to like just wind down, think about like, especially from the airport to the hotel is a good time to rethink the experience. How was it? I do not particularly like do only videos about hotels because I don't think the interest is there, but I try sometimes to make them part of the experience. But yeah, traditionally my videos always end at hotels, but it's not something that most of the viewers are interested in, unless it's something really like outstanding. I just came back from Russia and I stayed at the Hotel Ukraina, which is one of the most famous hotels in the world. It is the tallest in Europe. The architecture is just mind-blowing. And that is something that I wanted to give my viewers a little bit of a taste of it, because the hotel is just like outstanding. And people really loved it. And the response was really great. But if I just featured a Sheraton somewhere in London, nobody would care, to be honest.
And I'm sure there's a lot of reviews out there about the Sheraton in London, isn't it? So what you're really trying to provide is a bespoke service and something very unique. Now, I've never actually flown in an aircraft where there's a vlogger. Now, there's plenty of you guys out there and girls out there. So how do you go about seeking permission, right? So I'm a traveler. And I see Josh, I'm assuming you're carrying some sort of camera as you walk in, saying hello to the flight attendants, etc. How do you go about that? Is it something you need to get pre-arranged from the airline, or are you allowed to just simply record?
So I don't ask the airline for permission before I come, because as I say, I try to be unbiased, not announced, so I can give people a truthful, an honest experience, authentic experience of what it's like to travel. Unfortunately, with the attention and the fame that you get over the years, some airlines deflect my name in the system. They know that I'm coming, and obviously they're going to roll out the red carpet. However, I do not try to show faces in my videos. I have a little GoPro, which most people don't even notice. And if you would sit next to me in economy, you wouldn't even notice that I'm vlogging, because I have a little left mic, which I'm holding up there. And I try and really like to be very discreet about the experience, because I don't want to bother the person that is sitting next to me. Because I honestly, when I see people vlog, especially when I was on this Air India flight, some people are very vocal, very loud, and it can get very disturbing. But that is very important for me not to do so, because I can't talk on a flight and say how terrible the experience was while creating a problem for the person sitting next to me who paid the same price. And he might be really annoyed that I'm constantly talking to the camera, which is not like probably 5 minutes of the flight. I talk into the camera. I take a lot of B-roll, and that then creates the whole experience. It's just very important to stay low-key, to not bother your fellow passengers. But it's also for me important to not tell the airline that I'm coming, because that wouldn't serve the purpose, because I know we live in a world where there's a lot of influencers and they love free stuff, you know, oh, I love this. And I say whatever you want, right? And I think that's why I'm like also proudly would say I'm an aviation journalist, because for me it is important to be self-funded, to pay for my flights and not to accept any freebies, and just to hold airlines also like accountable in that sense, which enhances the experience for everybody else. And I know usually what happens after the flights, there's people like I have a great network within the aviation industry. And then sometimes I hear most of the videos end up on the desk of the CEO or the chief marketing officer or customer service officer. And they talk about these kind of things and they do implement a lot of those changes. And that is where I take most of the pride in my work. It might look annoying, or this is this guy creating problems, or sounds entitled or anything like this. It's an airline review. You know, you go really into the details. And for some people, it sounds like you're whining, you're complaining, which is not the case. But when I know and I hear that very often, what happens behind the scenes, it has brought so many positive changes, and it would not serve the purpose if I tell the airline that I'm coming. But privacy also is for me very important. Some crew, they have no problem being shown. But if they have an issue, I usually blur their faces and make sure that it's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, fair call. So you did mention it, that you are completely independent. So just to be absolutely clear to our listeners, Josh hasn't paid me to be on this podcast, and I haven't paid him as a guest. And most of the listeners know that the DevRugger Personal Finance Show is also completely free and completely independent. So we don't promote any products. But so you use your own money, right? So the money that you generate is your own money, which means there is no kickbacks, there is no payment for reviews. And hopefully over time, airlines realize that they can't buy you.
Exactly. Airlines have tried, and I think we're going to get into this. But yes, I'm not tempted. Money has never been my motivation. Generally, I come from a very humble background. Money is obviously, it pays for the flights, and it does enable what I do. But other than that, there's no motivation for me in that.
So you did mention some airlines have tried to buy you. So let's get straight into the controversies, right? Am I allowed to mention airlines in this podcast? Are you contractually obliged not to talk about it, or is it free for all?
Full disclosure, when you sent me a list of questions, I said, don't be easy on me. You can ask me whatever you want. So here we go.
All right. So I'm going to bring up Qatar Airlines, right? Because we all want to go there. And if people haven't seen that video, watch it. And then watch the response. So can you just summarize the whole saga? Because I think that my understanding is you got to the airport and they said, sorry, Mr. Cahill, you can't board the flight because of a video that you had posted online. Can you tell us, the listeners, what happened?
That is correct. So once in a while, I fly Qatar Airways, and I was flying from Colombo to London with a stop in Doha. And I titled the video and saying it's the shocking decline of Qatar Airways, because they had a lot of controversies because of the Airbus A350 issue, where the CEO said they're not safe to fly it. And it was just minor cosmetic issues. That was the statement by Airbus. And no other airline has taken the 350 out of service. And based on this, the fleet of Qatar Airways is very diverse. They had to get planes they wanted to get. They had to get planes are supposed not to fly anymore because they were supposed to be retired. And that reflected in the product. So when I was boarding that flight, I ended up on a really old Airbus A330. Where each seat had like a little entertainment box underneath it, like something that you don't see in the industry anymore because it has evolved so much. The crew was not very motivated. It was the lavatory was in an absolute awful state. They ran out of meals, and I'm a freaking flyer, right? So I can compare the product to other airlines, especially in economy. I was flying economy class, and if an airline sells me being or like proudly advertising themselves as the very best in the world, that's what I judge you on, right? This is how it works. And that's what I did. I said, no, Qatar is a solid airline, but this experience and a lot of flights before weren't anywhere near this. And I published that video. And then, things took a bit of a different turn. And I was approached by Qatar Airways the second I posted that video. I think the video has 700,000 views, a million on Facebook. So it created quite some attention. And they reached out to me and they said, first of all, this is off record and we would love for you to remove the video and we would offer you a free flight in return. And that is not something that I stand for. And it was also not my motivation to get anything in return. I post a video, the case is closed for me. But yeah, they literally tried to bribe me. And I said, you know, I have flights booked with Qatar Airways in like 2 weeks because I wanted to fly their new 737 MAX. And yeah, I showed up later in Abu Dhabi, wanted to check in for my flight. And then they said, hey, Mr. Cahill, you're no longer allowed to fly with Qatar Airways and you're banned for the unseeable future.
So you're still banned. So you can't fly Qatar unless they unban you.
That is correct. I'm still banned. And then in order, so after this video, I did a second video, which was talking about exactly the case because I thought like I have a responsibility to speak about this. If this is how they deal with negative feedback, and they probably attempt that as well in order to get rid of bad PR, I had to make a second video. And that video reached a million views, made global headlines all over the world. Qatar declined to comment on any I'm even invited Qatar to speak on my channel. Like, let's meet in person and we can talk about it. Full transparency, right? Because there was an issue, like, let's talk about it, right? If you have nothing to hide, I have nothing to hide. Let's just come together like two adults and let's talk about our differences. But yeah, I'm very glad that this video then reached a lot of people, a lot of media was talking about it, and it also helped. I think Qatar has changed a lot ever since in terms of the way they treat their crew. They had a curfew in place back in the day for the crew. They couldn't use their smartphones, all that kind of things. So a lot of things have changed. The CEO has changed ever since as well, not because of my video, but I think it was a great reminder that you can't get away with silencing flight reviewers, journalists. And I think that was my message behind the Qatar Airways video, the second that got so much global attention.
And is Qatar the only airline that's been so, I guess, rejecting your review? Have you had issues like this, maybe on a lesser scale with other airlines? Or do most airlines just accept the feedback and go, you know what, we stuffed up, we probably need to improve?
I've never been by any other airline to say that. Obviously, there has been, when you are, I mean, the media is considering me as the most watched flight reviewers. Obviously, whatever I say, there's a lot of commenting as well. There has been cases with Singapore Airlines, for example, or Malaysia Airlines, but nobody has ever like even thought about like banning me, I guess, because they try to deal with the issue, you know? I mean, there's always some substance to the videos. Otherwise, not that many people would watch it, you know? I have that expertise in that field, and I think I'm very fair. And I'm just trying to point out what the shortcomings are. And no, the airlines generally are very nice. Sometimes you don't hear anything from them ever, you know? Some just don't care. Some they reach out, they try to meet you. Some try to call you and like, I get more feedback and trying to get ideas how to improve or what was the issue. But that was being silenced. No, that has never happened, but that was the Qatar Airways was the first to do so. And I'm still on their no fly list.
How interesting. You know, disclosure, I'm a frequent flyer with Singapore Airlines. I have actually never had any issues with Singapore Airlines. Of course, I don't vlog about them, but I have to say, generally, they've been very, very good. I'm a great fan of Singapore Airlines, and I'm a great fan of Changi Airport, probably one of the best transit airports that I've ever transited through, which is so seamless. And I guess you've already answered this question because you're kind of famous in this space. So they see your name on the flight manifest and they see your name in the passenger list. Have you ever gone, something's up here? You sort of walk into the airline, everyone's super nice to you, and they provide this sort of fantastic experience, and you sort of go, it's a bit artificial.
It has happened. Just recently, I was flying Fly Beyond, which is this new all business class airline from the Maldives, and they knew that I was coming. And but still, it wasn't a great experience because I think the problem is you can put on a show, but I can tell if somebody is genuinely a service person or somebody is not. I've worked in the hospitality industry a long time. I met people from all over the world traveling and culture-wise. So I do feel, I believe at least, that I have a great understanding of who is genuinely in love with their job and who is not. I'm wrong a lot of times as well, probably, but I could tell that it wasn't that they knew that I was coming. I was told later from the pilots as well that they were expecting me, but I think it's kind of like they seemed a bit more nervous actually than trying to deliver an experience. And I was still able to point out so many shortcomings, which I heard then 2 weeks later, a friend of mine was flying the airline and they implemented exactly the changes that I've suggested. And that makes me so happy and so proud that airlines listen and they really try instead of like being all weird about it and trying to ban you. No, they said like, oh, he's right. You know, for example, when you go on any business class flight, and I'm sure you have traveled in business class, you get generally addressed by your name, right? Which is this little thing that adds to the experience. And or like how to introduce, they have iPads and those wireless headphones and stuff like that, but it would never talk me through it. And now imagine you find somebody who knows nothing about tech, you'd be quite lost. So I'm like trying to also like provide the solution at the spot right away. And then my friend said they did exactly what you suggested, you know, and it was an all business class airline and their motto, their slogan is a beyond amazing experience. So let me help them to make that a beyond amazing experience, because it wasn't that great when I got on the flight. But it's always nice to hear that airlines really pick up on the things that we say. And I think this is why we are so important for the industry. Everything needs an opposition. Everything that we need people to point out those shortcomings. For a lot of people, they have to, let's say I go to Maldives for a honeymoon, I spend so much money and I want the experience. That's business class is not traveling. Business class is an experience, and it starts the second I check in Melbourne for you, for example, at the airport. You want to go to the lounge, you want to indulge, you want to feel like the king of the world for like 7 hours, right? And this is exactly a product that people pay for. And sometimes you have to remind airlines, as great as they are, whether it's Singapore Airlines, which I agree is a fantastic airline, or Qatar Airways, that sometimes we have to remind them that this is what you're selling us for. You know, and I'm team customer, I'm not team airline, unlike some other aviation people, but everybody decides which story they want to tell. And that is important for me.
Yeah, no, well said. I mean, when I first traveled business class for the very first time, and prior to that, always traveled economy, it is a big jump. You get into this cabin, you don't know where things are. You don't even know how to operate the entertainment screen sometimes. And there's like the noise cancelling headphones. So you do need a little bit of, I suppose, education or tutorial. And it's nice to be able to ask the flight attendant, hey, how do I actually pull up the, my thing is, how do I pull up the food tray, right? How do you do that? Because in business, it's completely separate and it's completely different. So certainly really important. And it is an experience. I mean, I traveled Singapore Airlines to Amsterdam, and it's like $15,000 or something like that I paid. I'm like, well, that's a lot of money. Better get the experience for that money. Now, we'll take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to delve deep into Josh's YouTube. And we'll talk a little bit about his income, obviously, you know, within confidential manner, and also talk about traveling, and also finally finish up with how Josh invests his money. Because ultimately, right, Devraga is all about personal finance. So we've got to finish on that topic. So we'll be right back.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click get help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click get help.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All right, welcome back. We're here with YouTube airline vlogger Josh Cahill, who's actually based in Colombo. He's actually in Colombo today recording, so really appreciate on a Friday. So I'm recording on a Friday evening, which is Friday afternoon back in Sri Lanka. Now, I just want to talk a little bit about YouTube, right? When you say you buy your own tickets, is mostly your income from ad revenue? I mean, how do you make money from YouTube? Because you've got a huge following. Is it predominantly ad revenue, or do you have other sort of sources?
So my main income is YouTube. And YouTube is a great platform to generate income and to turn your passion into a job. And YouTube works very simple. You know, if you provide good content, and it depends a little bit on the viewerships and where they're from, you can make actually very good money. And I have on the side, I have Patreon as well. So where people can sign up for extra perks, such as like joining my WhatsApp group, have early access to my videos, have their name in there in the comments. I'm not advertising it right now, but I'm just trying to explain it so people know what they get. So they can sign up for different perks. And so I have almost 1,000 patrons who really enjoy my work. And they find a sense of community there as well, you know, being connected with other freaking flyers. So this is something that I do. I have a blog still, which I'm trying to bring back to life, which eventually I want to turn into an aviation news site, because that's technically how it all started. And then I have one sponsor, that is Surfshark. They have been with me for 5 years, and I do advertise them once a month on my... And that is pretty much it in terms of income that I have related to my aviation.
Right. And most of your audience is organic, right? I think you started way back in 2005 or something. Is that right? Or even just, oh no, you said 6 years ago. So 2005 was when you first started traveling, but really 6 years you've been on.
6 years is the YouTube journey. So the blog started actually in Melbourne. I lived in Melbourne for many years, and I worked in shitty jobs during the day, during the night. And then when I got back at home, I was working on my aviation blog, because I know there was a lot of people asking questions about aviation, about the different types of planes and all that stuff. So that was a very traditional blog, and that was 2012, pretty much 12 years ago. And then I added the visuals in 2018. That was my first year full-time YouTube. Before it was a side hustle, and then it became a main job, yeah.
Pretty quick to build a 1 million subscriber audience in 6 years. That's pretty impressive. I've been podcasting for around, I don't know, 5.5 years and nowhere near that.
But of course,
I've got a face for podcast. I'd get there, but I got a face for podcast. That's my disadvantage. Now, can I just ask, and again, you don't have to share any specifics. When you say YouTube income, again, most of my listeners are healthcare workers and people that just go to their jobs and get paid. I'm assuming, are we talking six-figure yearly income, or like 1 million subscribers, is it going to be higher? And you don't have to answer that question if you feel uncomfortable.
No, like, I do workshops on that stuff and trying to and inspire people. You know, it really depends how videos are going, right? So I generally have like 2 to 6 million viewers a month, including Facebook. Facebook is something that people will be surprised that you can post your videos on there and monetize as well. And it can go up to like $40,000-$50,000 a month if you have a great content and you reach especially a good viewership in the United States or somewhere in the Western world. Because let's say I do an Air India video which has 1 million views, or I do a video on Iran Air, for example. I have a video on Iran Air, has 3 million views, and it performed outstanding in the US because people are very interested in Iran because they can't travel there. It's a mysterious country. He flew Iran Air. And then I have a video about Emirates First Class, which has 22 million views. But because the watch time on Iran Air was about 15 minutes in average, and from a lot of US viewers, the average income is a lot higher, you know, like because they don't value, for example, the Indian viewer or Bangladeshi viewer as valuable as US watching, you know, because there's much more expensive advertisement. The companies that want to advertise on your channel to a US audience, they have obviously to pay a lot more. So, but then at the same time, in Bangladesh, there isn't that strength, like the economy isn't that, the people won't be probably buying anything off the ads that the company puts on there. So yeah, like, but it is a great tool. It makes great money, but you have to deliver quality. You know, it's not something that you get for free. You have to deal with a lot of, strange comments. There's people trying to stalk you. There's people trying to harm you. And people say it's so easy, but I think it's a very, very tough job. It's a 24/7 job. It's entertainment, but it's also like something I add that journalistic part to it as well. Like, you know, but I don't want to feel like that I have to justify myself that I'm making a good money because people say, oh, get a job. That's a comment that I get quite often as well. But it is actually, entertainment is what we do off work, and that keeps us sane. And I spend a lot of money, so you can watch something amazing for free, you know, and that's YouTube. Eventually, like, all the content that you can access there doesn't cost you a dime, while I spend a lot of money producing this. So I think it's fair, and everybody has a chance. You know, if you have a good niche and you're an expert, like, say you're a doctor and you talk about amazing stuff which interests people, you have exactly the same possibilities.
Yeah, look, I think when you have niche knowledge, completely acceptable to sell that knowledge and sell your brain. In fact, there's a lot of YouTubers who are doctors who do their own little niche. They talk about anatomy and physiology and education videos, or, you know, some of them talk about food hygiene, some of them talk about mental health, autism, all that sort of stuff. So there's a fair bit of, you know, diversification of income rather than just going to clinic and seeing patients or going to the hospital and working in the emergency department or being a surgeon, etc. Can I ask, you do your own editing, do you? So you've got your own editing, like you don't hire anyone to do all that for you?
No, I do everything myself. It's a one-man show pretty much. I do have now a guy who helps me with my website, but I do the editing, I do the planning, I book the flights. It's all done by myself.
How long does it take to the experience of filming a video, getting off the flight, going to the hotel, editing, and then uploading? What's that trajectory like in terms of time and effort?
So obviously you go on a flight, you generally, I get the camera out at the airport, do my intro, board the plane, do all that stuff that I have to do. That is very, it's like a routine, right? I film the way I edit it. And so if it's flight review, it's very simple. You just have to fill the gaps, right? It's always kind of like the same exercise. It usually takes 4 or 5 hours to edit a video, sometimes a little bit longer. It depends what it is. Now, if I do something like Qatar Airways, which requires a lot of research, you know, you have to reach out to people, you have to talk to certain people, you have to make sure you're telling the right story. That can take 3 to 4 days because it requires a lot more than just talking about in-flight product. So it depends on the content that you create. The Russia series that I have going on my channel right now, it's very interesting. Obviously, it requires a lot of sensitivity and a very difficult topic, you know. And so you have to sometimes put a lot more caution into how you say things, you know, and you have to be unbiased. You have to make sure that you don't hurt people in their way they think. You have to bring it back to traditional journalism, be neutral as possible, but you have to talk about diversity as well. So that requires a lot more work as well. But generally, it is like editing time can take a whole day, can take 3 days, can sometimes just take 2 hours if there isn't too much that happened. But it can be quite demanding at times.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, there's all these sort of things that people put effort into before and after and during, right? I mean, not to your scale, but even the podcasting, I have to prepare for episodes, like, you know, think about what questions I'm going to ask or think about the topics, which listeners may not understand. And I put a fair bit of effort into that, and I, you know, record it. And then, I mean, for me, I don't edit any of this. Shout out to This Is Money team. They do it all for me. But you've got the added burden of doing everything yourself. So obviously you kind of a whole package, really. You do everything yourself and there's no sort of marketing person or, you know, admin person, et cetera. Now, you did mention about sensitivities and you did mention right at the start of the episode about organizing the first, I think, all-female flight in Afghanistan. And you tend to travel to places that a lot of other vloggers don't, like you mentioned about East Timor, and I think you've also been to North Korea, if I'm not mistaken.
North Korea, Iraq, Afghanistan, you name it, Libya.
These are not, you know, dare I say, safe countries compared to your Netherlands or the UK, Australia and New Zealand, etc. How do you protect yourself and do you ever worry about it? I mean, a guy like you walking down North Korea, you're going to stand out.
Well, first of all, in a world that is dominated by very ugly headlines and frightening stories, I can tell you that the world is a beautiful and very safe place. And I think it's the best time to be alive. And it looks a lot more scarier than it actually is. I feel much more unsafe on a Friday night somewhere in a suburb in London that I'm not familiar with than going to Libya, Afghanistan, Iraq, Baghdad, North Korea, Pyongyang, you name it, right? People are generally really nice in person. And if you have a bit of common sense and you prepare yourself accordingly, you generally have a good time. And I think this is my conclusion after traveling all these countries. But yes, but they have the most beautiful stories to tell. And that is the thing with Afghanistan. I've been to Afghanistan before I did aviation journalism, stuff like that. I tried to go a little bit into this conflict journalism and all kind of stuff, but I wasn't a terrible writer and it wasn't for me. But I do enjoy places that are out of the ordinary, where there's no rules, you know, where it is a different world, but it makes you appreciate the world that we live in, you know, and I think that is something a lot of people don't know because they've never been to these places. Such as I've been to Russia just recently, just to see what it's like, you know, what it's like at the moment. We talk so much about it, but actually nobody ever goes there and like tries to build their own opinion on these kind of things. And it generally tells you a much more relaxed story because in the end of the day, like everybody just want to have a peaceful life and we're just going to get along and work on their careers. And yeah, and then I went to Afghanistan in 2014 for the first time. I built up a great network there. I know the airline. And then one day they reached out to me, hey, Josh, how about we do something? And then we were talking and then I came up that they have a first female Afghan first officer pilot. And I came up with like, what an incredible story would it be to create Afghanistan's first all-female flight. And I think it was also like an event that made great global headlines. And we were able to save the lives of those women because of this video a year later with the fall of Kabul. And I'm still in touch with them until today. We became great friends. And I made sure that they are taken care of and that they find jobs in their new lives in the West where they all are now. And aviation sometimes creates some beautiful, beautiful stories at the most unexpected places.
Yeah. And I think for that, you actually won a Global Aviation Award, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Aviation Achievement Award in 2021. And I am actually nominated for the United Nations World Tourism Organization Award as Best Airline Critic, which is going to be the ceremony is held in Berlin next month, I think, at the ITB. So, it's great that this work gets recognized as well. But
yeah. So that's pretty big. Congratulations for being nominated and good luck.
Thank you.
From myself and all the listeners as well. And we hope you win. Now, you travel a lot. Do you have any dependents? How do you manage family? Or are you a single person with great flexibility in able to do what you do?
I think that is how it all started off. Until 2 years ago, I didn't even have a place to stay. So I made a decision in 2018. I say, if I don't have to pay rent, I have $1,000 extra to spend on flights. So in order to build my business, I went all in. Just a reminder, like when I was living in Perth in 2012 and I didn't know what to eat, you know, I had no job and I was like living from day to day and I went through like a real, real struggle and I've been in different situations. But when I went all in, I said, okay, no rent, no place. I'm going to stay at Airbnb, hotels, so I can create all this content. Obviously, I'm single, no kids, no family. But no, I wanted to build this for myself. I wanted to live my life and create something amazing, which I was able to. But I think in order to build a business or do these kind of things, it takes a lot of time, you know, and you have to make sacrifices on the way. And like, instead of like going on holidays or partying, I said, I'm going to do this. And then 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, I moved to Colombo. Because for me, it's always important. I want to get something in return for my money. Here, I can live a great life. My dad used to live here back in the days, and you have great living standard here. That's when I also like it. I took a risk with this because I was never used to it. Now it's the most beautiful thing in the world that I have a place that I can come home. I can put my little airplane models and such. But yeah, like I did sacrifice everything I had, went all in, and it grew. And then you see that things are working. And yeah, right now it's much more comfortable than it was 6 years ago.
Yeah, so take risks and enjoy the benefits. So does that mean your income is in US dollars and then you basically spend in Sri Lankan rupees? So therefore, you're able to leverage 50K a month in Sri Lanka in USD travels way more than 50K a month in Melbourne, right?
Interesting is all my bank accounts are in Australia. So I get paid in USD, but it all appears obviously of Australian dollars. So, and this is also very good because when the US dollar has a high, the Aussie dollar usually has a low, and vice versa. So it always kind of balances it out. And, yeah, but like, obviously I can live a much better life here, with the resources that I have, right? I get paid in USD, and you have to think of yourself, right? A lot of people that I know, they're leaving the West, they're moving to Southeast Asia, they move even to Africa because you get a lot more for your buck, you know? And I think this is something that you have to think of yourself. How do I get the best out of my life? If you don't have family, it's a lot more difficult, you know, but that made most sense for me. And when you don't have family, and no dependency, nobody depends on me. Like, I eventually want to have kids in one day, but I always wanted to make sure if I have them that I'm stable and I have money for it, because it's something that's very expensive. Because I look at a lot of my friends, and they wanted to say, "Oh, Josh, you lived a dream life," but they decided to get married young, and then you kind of like stuck in that scenario for a long time because you have responsibilities, and that I've never had, and that's helped me and enabled me to build that career that I have.
Yeah, look, when I travel, and everyone knows I'm not single, I've got kids, married, etc., family man. My biggest stress is, what am I going to get for my kids when I come back? Because they're going to ask me. They'll be like, "What'd you get for us?" It's the first thing they ever do. Every time I walk into the house, it's all about them. And already when I'm getting on the flight, I'm already getting stressed about what sort of souvenirs.
But then airports are great places to get stuff. No, that's a good thing.
That's overpriced, unnecessary souvenirs is my forte. So, I just want to highlight the concept that Josh has highlighted, which will come in May when I release an episode on arbitrage. Essentially, what Josh is doing is a very well-known financial personal finance strategy where you earn in a higher income country, but you live in a lower income country because your purchasing power of that money goes way, way further, and that's called geo-arbitrage. So it's very, very common in Australia that people that in certain, particularly doctors who are relatively high income earners, their incomes don't really change significantly between Adelaide and Melbourne and Sydney, but the dollar that you can go further in Adelaide than it does in Melbourne or Sydney. So that's a great example, and Josh is living that example. Now, nothing is done at Devraga Personal Finance episodes until we talk about money, right, and investing. So do you invest? And what sort of things do you invest in apart from obviously your own business? You know, what about retirement? What about stock market? What about bond market or anything like that? Is that something you do?
That is the part of the interview where I have not much to contribute because I do not invest. As I said, like I invest in the quality of my lifestyle, and my investment is pretty much a living, as you said, abroad, where I do get a lot more out of my lifestyle. And I have my living costs a lot lower. And this is how I invest. But when it comes to money, I'm very, very boring. I don't know nothing about bitcoins. I know nothing about these kind of things, stocks, investment and stuff like, I'm willing to learn about this, but I do feel like I'm very, very hesitant. What does the future look like? You know, you talked about retirement and pension and all these kind of things. This is probably something that I have to figure out when the time comes. But I think my investment is now investing in this news website, Aviation News, where I said I built something that is based on passive income. I can do that right now and I have the expertise. You know, investing is not always like, oh, you know, stock market and bitcoins and whatever, hoping that your money doubles. And the world changes rapidly every day. And I don't think most of people won't even get a pension, even if you work in a normal job. If you're a nurse at a hospital somewhere in Germany, if you don't think about ways how to get money when you're older, it won't probably be enough what you get paid out by the state. Mm. I can't tell you what, I wouldn't be certain to tell you what the world looks like in 5 years. And I don't know what it looks like in 40 years. But I think our generation probably won't have the luxury to retire. You know, you probably will need to hustle or build some side businesses until you probably die.
So your strategy is essentially have a source of income for the rest of your life where you don't have to exert your time to create that income. Hopefully this news website auto-generates some passive income, and hopefully that'll be your sort of retirement strategy. Now, if you want to learn about personal finance and investing concepts, have I got a podcast for you? You're always welcome to subscribe if you got some time. You know, I know what you can do when you fly. Apart from recording, you can listen to podcasts. So there you go. We're coming to the end of the episode. You know, I only do possibly all legs, 10 to 15 flights a year. So I'm not a huge, you know, frequent flyer like yourself. I think you do like 150 flights. And shout out to Tony Gibbs, the radiologist, does about 80 flights a year. So nothing like what you guys do. How do you keep up the pace? And any tips for people like me and who are traveling, some of the things that we should watch for or worry about, particularly when it comes to airlines?
Well, 100, I don't know where this number comes from. 150 flights is a lot, but I did 104, 106 last year. It's still too much. It's exhausting. It takes a toll and you have to take long breaks recovering from flying. But tips for flying, did you ask me how to improve the flying experience? Is that
So what are some of the things that we should look out for when I'm booking a flight, you know, things like seats and all that sort of stuff? Is there something that we should do routinely where we're just randomly just booking flights? Or, for example, you know, night flights, are they cheaper compared to day flights?
I think, as you said in the beginning, it's always good to see which type of plane you fly. Always try to fly on a wide body, because let's say you fly Melbourne, Singapore. You know, when Australians go overseas, it's usually that one stop somewhere in Asia or Dubai. Try to find a wide body plane, you know, everything that is, you can educate yourself, 787s, 330s. Try what I do. When you try a lot in economy class, I always pick a seat in the back, because airlines traditionally start filling up the planes from the front. So you quite often end up with a poor man's business class, which is called a whole row to yourself, which works for me quite often as well. Be nice at the check-in. Check-in agent can do miracles for you. If you're nice, and I always try to say, hey, is there somebody sitting next to me? Is the flight too full? Do you mind actually blocking the seat next to me? They can do that. And they have done that a lot of time for me. So which means you don't have a seat neighbor, which enhances your travel experience by so much already as well. You can check websites like Expert Flyer. You can see the load, how many people are on there, who sits next to you. I can tell you, if you spend a little bit of time, let's say you take half an hour before the day before your flight or whatever, you can turn even your terrible business class, economy class experience into something good if you do your homework. And that is something that I always try to tell people. It's a bit of an exercise, but flying in a middle seat, full row, 8 hours, 10 hours. I did Sydney to Johannesburg, 15 hours recently. And it can be tough, you know? So yeah, like be a bit smart about it. Maybe watch my videos and get great tips. Be smart about the airline that you pick. And sometimes it's better to fly actually a full service airline than a budget airline, because that can hurt sometimes as well.
Yeah, of course. Shout out to a colleague of mine, Dr. CT. I can't mention his name. He actually sent me a photo of him flying in exactly the back row of a wide body with the entire four row to himself. And he actually said, Dev, This is better than business class. This is fantastic. He was just sleeping the whole time for a 14-hour flight, which is fantastic.
So I'm sure he watched my videos.
he probably does. And I didn't know about the whole back row technique. So that's really, really interesting. So something that I'll definitely keep in mind. Now, last question before we finish up. A lot of controversy in the aircraft space recently with Boeing. Doors flying out, bolts being loose. And it's one of the reasons why I check what flight and what aircraft that I fly in. You did mention about Airbus, Qatar, saying that they had some issues. It was something like insulation or something like that. Do you have a preference? What's your preferred aircraft if you were to fly all the time?
I think in terms of comfort is the Airbus A380, the super jumbo. I think we all know that double-decker plane for the ones that are not that familiar. It's an incredible plane, even in economy class. It's spacious, it's quiet. You have a lot more room and the travel experience is going to be fantastic. That's the plane that you want to be on, especially when you fly out from Australia. Emirates, Qatar, Etihad, they all fly their 380s there. So that is something to look at. I personally love the 380. I love the 350s, the Dreamliners. I try to avoid the 737, not just the MAX, whenever I can, because they're generally tired, like this. It's not a comfortable plane, you know. I'm an Airbus kind of guy, I'd say, because they have beautiful, beautiful planes, and nothing matches the Airbus A380 in terms of comfort. With the 737 MAX, you know, they said it was the most scrutinized plane in the world. They said it was the most safest plane in the world after those two crashes that happened in Indonesia and in Ethiopia. And now we are seeing ourselves again with some hiccups on the MAX. So it is probably a plane I wouldn't feel comfortable flying, you know, and they tell us one story and then exactly something else happens. I don't want to say avoid it, but be sometimes a bit cautious of what plane you fly.
Yeah, definitely check the aircraft type. Look, Boeing's had a lot of reputational damage in the last sort of few months because of what's happened over the years, and especially what's happened with the Alaska Airlines fiasco and the way they handled it. I mean, you know, one thing that I've learned, and also from your Qatar experience, is, you know, you just got to handle it better than the way some of these people have handled, some of these companies have handled it. I have to say, my personal favorite, I agree with you, Airbus. I'm a great fan of Airbus A350, and I think the A350-1000s are getting deployed. I think Japan Airlines has just deployed some.
And they look beautiful, don't they?
they just look amazing. The mask look of the nose end where the pilots are, and you look through the boarding gate, it just looks mean. You know, Boeing looks a bit tired, I have to say. I'm a big Airbus fan, and I am flying the 380 twice this year to Europe, which is great. So looking forward to that. I haven't flown a 380 in a long time because of COVID and all that sort of stuff, yeah. But absolutely. And recently flew the A350 through Singapore, and great experience.
Yeah. It's unfortunately the future is that those 380s are disappearing. Unfortunately, they're very expensive to operate, and we're changing to twin engine planes. So, but we hope that the 380 stays in the sky as long as we can. Hopefully,
I also heard in the grapevine. I could be wrong, and won't hold you up too long. But airlines are slowly starting to get rid of first class, because it's just too expensive. Their profit margins are significantly lower in first class, which is quite surprising, because the average person traveling would think that the most profitable sectors would be first and business. It's actually premium, I think, up to 30-35% profit margins, and then economy, and then business and first class, not much.
Yeah, it kind of changes now. Like the business class is being replaced. You get premium economy, which is debatable whether it's much of an upgrade. Airlines are unfortunately getting rid of their first class cabins.
Yeah, it's just not profitable. And it's a corporate decision, right? I mean, this is all private businesses. Well, that's all we have time for. So thank you very much for Josh Cahill, vlogger, YouTube, I guess, sensation, controversy creator, which is, and also transparent, and really appreciate the fact that we were able to talk about everything today. I always feel that it's nice to have the transparent, open conversations, and nothing is kind of off limits. But I also respect that some guests who come on want some things off limits. I really appreciate you taking the time and taking the time to answer all the questions. And it's been fun.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. Thanks for having a great conversation with a fellow F geek, I'd say. Yeah. And that is something that I really appreciate. And as I said, like, we had a good conversation. We talked about the behind the scenes, which people always appreciate, so they can see actually what it's like to be an aviation YouTuber. And I thought we gave them a little bit of an insight. And I really hope that your listeners enjoying this episode.
So thank you very much again, Josh. And that's an interview with Josh Cahill, YouTube blogger. We'll put his YouTube channel in the comment section and also the Patreon link if anyone wants to contribute. Some of the listeners may already be doing that. So if you do, thank you very much. And remember, listen, subscribe to Josh's channel and also mine. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcast or whatever podcasting platform that you may be using, or just leave 5 stars on every platform. That's even better. And please leave a positive comment and a positive review, because that helps the algorithm. That helps people listen and find these episodes so that people can improve their financial literacy and also have some entertainment and education at the same time. My name's Dev Raga. This is Dev Raga Personal Finance. And as always, please make sure you stay safe.
We acknowledge the traditional custodians of the lands on which we live and work, and pay respects to their elders past, present and emerging. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to this podcast. This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement, target market determination and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Symo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, and Glenn James are authorised representatives of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.